There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
The Bookshelf, what you should be reading.
We've got Sharmila Mohan, who's our guest today. So initial reaction to the book, Sharmila, how did you find it? And also, how is Yo Nesbo retold Shakespeare? How is this working?
Well, Macbeth is a play which has really been done by various people throughout the last century. And I was wondering how it would be relevant in the present, in the present age. But I must say, I was very surprised, and I'm really happy to have read the book. It was an eye-opener, and he's done a brilliant job. I would not have believed that the workings of, was it 16th century, 15th century Scotland? 16th century mm-hmm. Scotland would be appropriate for 20th century Europe.
I think it might even be 12th century, actually.
I think the original story is 1100 and something.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yes, so I had no idea, and I was very curious to know, although we do know that a lot of Shakespeare has been adapted to be relevant in the modern age. But I would suggest that this is a book which is worth reading. It was really good.
To anybody listening wondering exactly how it's been updated, so basically Yo Nesbo's got it's a Scandi-noir take on Macbeth, and he's put the classic characters amidst police corruption in what we assume is a rundown industrial town somewhere in Scotland.
Yeah.
And in a lot of reviews, people are equating it to Glasgow. That's what it seems like. Did you feel like the sense of place was clear?
Well, only when we talk about Fife, I think that's when you start thinking, okay, it's got to be in Scotland. Mm. And then when you talk about the crumbling industrial situation and the lack of jobs, well, then I think Scotland, mining towns, those come to mind, because we know that that has happened. But I would say that, yes, there is a slight ambiguity. It could be in any part of the world, quite frankly.
It doesn't ring true for me to Scotland, because as a child, we used to go to Scotland every summer because I had family there. It was a village in the Cossacks that we used to stay in, mm-hmm. but Glasgow was near. Mm-hmm. And this is meant to be in the 1970s, isn't it? Yo Nesbo set
yes,
it in the 1970s.
Right.
It was not reminiscent landscape-wise of that part of the world. It was, I can't really say. It was the industrial north. I felt much
yes,
more the industrial
yes,
north
yes, yes.
than, maybe sort of along the coast of the north. You felt, because it was the sea.
The sea was
there as well, yeah. Very, very much. But it starts off, Annabelle, let me just read you the first couple of sentences of Macbeth by Yo Nesbo. The shiny raindrop fell from the sky through the darkness towards the shivering lights of the port below. Cold, gusting northwesterlies drove the raindrop over the dried-up riverbed that divided the town lengthwise and the disused railway line that divided it diagonally. The four quadrants of the town were numbered clockwise. Beyond that, they had no name. No name the inhabitants remembered anyway. And if you met those same inhabitants a long way from home and asked them where they came from, they were likely to maintain they couldn't remember the name of the town either.
See, so, I just found that opening confusing.
I can see it, but it doesn't say to me Glasgow or Scotland. There are places on the north coast on the railway line going up there that sound. And then you turn to chapter 44, the end. The shiny raindrop fell from the sky through the darkness towards the shivering lights of the port below. Northwesterly gusts of wind drove the raindrop east of the slow-flowing river that divided the town in two and the south of the busy train line that split the town diagonally. So he sort of winds it up beautifully at the end. I thought it was very clever to come back to the raindrop.
Absolutely.
And that sort of image of that shiny raindrop, it's like a sort of a microscopic view into the book. In the Macbeth that he's created or recreated, Yo Nesbo, it is very dark. It is very bloodthirsty. It has all the sort of the normal attributes that we expect from a book from Jo Nesbø and his Harry Hole, his detective.
Yes.
Except it's in a different place. And I think he's captured a place, but it's not a recognisable place.
No, no. I think I have a feeling he may have just done that on purpose so that you, because you could really take the situation that he's created, which is, you know, which is reflected, reflective of Macbeth, and that you could transpose it to any country in the world and the situation is more or less similar or comparable. So that could be one of the reasons.
And you do feel for Macbeth. You know, you do feel the tragedy of this orphan in Jo Nesbø's story. You know, I really, really felt for him that he had an opportunity. He could have, if he was not involved with Lady, who's obviously Lady Macbeth, would not have gone down the route.
Well, I think he... that's probably what he wanted to write about and to tell us, because Shakespeare's Macbeth is definitely flawed. And he's reflected that very well, because when we listen to Duff describing Macbeth and he talks about himself, I mean, I thought it was just brilliant the way he's done it. You know, when Duff first comes on the scene and I'm like, Duff, okay, so that's Macduff, right?
Yes.
And then when you go through the cast of characters, I thought he's very cleverly created male characters and also introduce female characters who would have been males in the original. So
yes.
I think that also adds a little diversity to
Banquo.
The whole thing.
I mean, there are a lot of...
and the names are all familiar. I mean, Cawdor, that's what sent the whole ball rolling, right? But going back to Macbeth, when Duff is actually describing him to Caithness, he says that Macbeth is actually a better person than I am because he would not take a life.
He would not take a life for someone who was defenseless.
Defenseless. Whereas, as we read the book and the events unfold, we do see that Duff had to take matters in his own hand on a couple of occasions, one which definitely lived with him. So it is, again, the flawed hero who goes along with the sway. Lady is very, very powerful, and
I think she's incredibly well drawn.
Very well drawn,
and the descent into madness, and the sort of the causes of the madness.
Yes.
You know, whether it's substance, whether it's
her past
trauma,
yes,
and
yes,
so on and so forth. I mean, it kept me turning the pages. I wanted to keep turning the pages because you know that it's not going to end well.
Oh, yes.
Anything
yes.
called Macbeth is not going to end well.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you wonder how he's going to put it in his way. So, you know, having Macbeth as part of the squad,
and also right from the opening, you realize that they are, although in the same team, in the same police force, but they're really not on the same side.
Mm.
You know, Macbeth is has this thing that Duff is not really capable enough to handle it, and he would probably do a better job. And there's a kind of underlying animosity which you pick up on. The other thing that I find Jo Nesbø has done very well, and that is the little hints he keeps giving throughout. He tells you that Duff and Macbeth have a history, which obviously was not there in the original, but it's there, and because of the shared history, they can't completely deny each other, but they don't really agree with each other either. The same thing about Lady. I mean, she's this beautiful, strong, dominating character, but then when we get a little insight into her head, she talks about what happened to her grandmother and her mother, and she's terrified she's going to go down the same way. And I think finally you are overcome with a lot of sadness when you know the ultimate is going to be the end. But
and I love the bits on the boat, you know, where the port and what goes on there and what part that plays into it. And yes, it could be, you know, it could be Glasgow and Edinburgh because you've got the big, what do they call it, Concord, is it? What's the name of the city, the better city?
Capital.
Capital, that's it,
yes.
Which could be Edinburgh.
It could be, yes, it could be, definitely.
But I cannot see Glasgow in what he draws here.
You don't really see much of Scotland in it, isn't it? Even when he's talking about Fife, you're sort of talking about, you feel, okay, that just could be another place, another town, a little way away from any port city, really.
Yeah.
But the water does play an important part, and it's quite fascinating. And I, for me, who had done Macbeth as part of her school and college curriculum, I thought, wow, I mean, you know, to turn Glamis into a boat, into a ship.
Yes.
And, you know, to have Cawdor as a person and then Malcolm, who is the son, is the deputy. So everything is so brilliantly used.
Mm. I thought it's very clever.
It shows a very intelligent.
But it isn't Harry Hole. It isn't, and it's
no, it's not. It's
completely.
Not.
But it's already in the Sunday Times bestselling list, unsurprisingly, because I think Jo Nesbø is such an incredibly popular writer that anyone is going to want to read this.
Yes, yes.
And I'm not sure. I'm not sure what people will make of it. I think it will leave some people cold or slightly frustrated, but.
Oh,
I for one, and it's a big book. It's 500 plus pages.
The Bookshelf, what you should be reading.
So we left off, we were talking about Macbeth, the retelling by Jo Nesbø, who's famous for his Harry Hole series. The Snowman in particular was remade into a film recently, starring the lovely Michael Fassbender.
Ah, yes.
So we were talking about how he's adapted it for the modern day, and it's part of the Hogarth Shakespeare series.
Yes.
So they've retold quite a few now. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering how they go about the process, you know, how they choose the play that they're going to write about, whether they're actually told you're going to write about Macbeth or this particular play. Mm-hmm. Here's Jo Nesbø talking about how he decided on writing about Macbeth.
The reason why I chose to retell Macbeth was, first of all, I mean, I was lucky. They let me choose. I guess they asked me quite early on. Otherwise, I'm quite sure Macbeth would have been taken by somebody else. But it's short. That may not sound like a good reason, but for me, if I was to create a story around the plot, I really wanted it to be a short and simple plot that I can build my own story around. So, and also, it's of course because it's my favorite Shakespeare play. And it's about moral choices, and I like the idea that it's the sort of antagonists who are also the protagonists of this story. There are in the original play, there are not really any clear protagonists. At least they are not in the center of the action, and I like that. I like that, you know, playing with characters, trying to manipulate your readers to sympathize with them or to despise them, and sort of shifting between the two.
I thought it was interesting that he chose it because it was shorter and it was kind of a basic plot that he could do his own, work his own magic
right,
with.
Because
you were saying that one of the things that he does really well with this is the concept is really good. So the way he's reimagined the classic characters with Macbeth as head of a SWAT team and Macduff as head of the organised crime unit. And
absolutely.
It's quite dark, 70s industrial. It works quite well as a concept. I picked up another book in the Hogarth Shakespeare series. So Anne Tyler has rewritten one of the comedies, The Taming of the Shrew, and it's called Vinegar Girl. And I was reading an interview about it, which I thought was quite interesting. So she actually said that when they first mentioned the possibility to me for her retelling The Taming of the Shrew, she said, "I actually laughed because here's somebody with terrible plots and they're not even his own, but wonderful words. And then someone comes along and says, why don't you take his terrible plot and add your inferior words to it? I mean, really, does it make any sense?" So what's your view of retelling Shakespeare in the first place, particularly where you know what's going to happen?
Well, as we were discussing off air, especially in a book like Macbeth, where you know that the author is a very, very well-established crime writer, and also, as we agreed, that the reason for reading a crime novel would be to find out what happened and how. But anyone who's read Macbeth or knows anything of Macbeth would actually know what was going to happen. So that sort of detracts from the original mystery of reading a crime fiction or a thriller. Having said that, as the book unravels, it is amazing the way he has knit in the original characters and the way he's played around with them.
There are still surprises, aren't there?
There are, definitely.
It is much more about the characters than the plot.
Yes.
That's the bit I like about it, yes. Because I'm very much someone that likes fiction for the people who are in it. And the plot, it's secondary, but it's not just I want a plot-driven book and I'm going to whiz along with that. So this, I think, was probably challenging for him. And he says Macbeth is short, but he certainly hasn't made this short. You know, it's a chunky book to read, and it's not a one-time sitting read either. But he does develop the characters. Because you know what's going to happen, you're going to think, how is he going to dig himself out of that? Because it doesn't go in the way that you think it's going to go. It's not cut and dried.
Yeah.
And I all the time, things happen and I think, now that's okay, because he's back in the scene. I thought he'd gone and so on and so forth.
And I thought that, and I agree with Annabelle when you say that that was probably very challenging for him, because to just have a cut and dried script and then to turn that into something which would hold the interest of a reader of today, someone who people who have so many books, so many authors at their, within reach. I think there is where his artistry and his creativity comes in.
And don't forget that Shakespeare himself was retelling
other people's stories,
other people's histories, myths, stories. I would say generally, not maybe Taming of the Shrew, but many of the tragedies and histories are all based on what he knew, and it was just his mastery with words. Now maybe Anne Tyler is not going to live up to.
She was a bit harsh with him as well, wasn't
she?
Some people really don't like Shakespeare. Yeah. I mean, I like what you said about it's been retold and retold and retold. So in a way, these Shakespeare retellings from Hogarth Shakespeare are like iterations of Chinese whispers in a way.
And Shakespeare really, it's not to read, it is to view. You know, I mean, the point of Shakespeare, all his work was to be performed.
Absolutely.
And you go and see any Shakespeare play performed, and it's a magical experience, and it can be done to death by having to study it, because that's not what Shakespeare wrote it for. You know, it is about the amazing language and the, you know, the soliloquies and the asides.
Absolutely.
And
the
I absolutely love Shakespeare in its right place.
I think my main frustration with this particular retelling of Macbeth is, you know, you read out the scene from the beginning with the raindrop and then how it comes full circle at the end, and I think that's beautiful. And as I was reading it, I think I was frustrated with the first 50 pages and the pace, because I felt like I was reading the perfect script for a film. And I could see what it would look like. The atmosphere is all there. It's brilliant.
Yes.
But it felt disappointing to be reading it and not watching it. I felt like it was very cinematic, almost too cinematic for a novel.
Absolutely, yes. After I read the book, I just wanted to either read or watch the actual Macbeth. So I didn't have time to watch the entire thing. So I actually, I found an audio reading of it, a dramatized version. And when I was listening to that, I was like, okay, he's done a good job, because, things suddenly happen. Initially, it's very slow and they're just, talking about the battle. And then all of a sudden, things come to a head. And before you know it, everything is spiraling.
Yeah.
And he's done it very well here, because I agree with you. The first 50 pages are very slow. And you're wondering, why doesn't he just get a grip on it and move a little? But once the actual event takes place, then things sort of just race ahead. And then you are really wondering how he's going to take it further. I was very impressed by the way he dealt with Banquo, more than Banquo, Fleance, Malcolm and Duff. I mean, the way he gets them together, That was, I think, a spark of brilliance.
And he handles the supernatural elements of the original story very well.
Oh, yes.
Also, and
yes.
That comes up in a few interviews. If you have a look online, in a few interviews, he says that one of the frustrations or difficulties that he had was how to adapt that particular part of it. And he does it very well.
Mm.
Isabel, you were saying that the fact that you knew what was coming and you knew the plot didn't stop you from reading the book because of the things that you find out about the character and how they're built up.
Yeah, because it's different. Obviously, the time is different, the place is different, the characters are different. The plot is different in that Macbeth is a policeman, as are most of the main characters, or they're the mayor or things like that.
Yeah.
So they've got different ways. And what I liked about Macbeth was that he'd been an orphan, he'd been abused, he had run away or escaped, and then he'd been part of the circus where he'd learnt his knife throwing skills, which are essential to the plot.
Absolutely.
So there's all these things, and he's an incredibly, I can see Macbeth, he's an incredibly attractive character as a sort of, he's very heroic, he's very muscular, he's very skilled, and he has got this, what Duff says, he is a better man. He is a better man. That's not his tragedy. He is an ethical man, even though, murder happens all around. That's not the issue with him. The issue is that he chooses the path he's going to go on, and he can't help himself.
Yes. I felt more empathy for this Macbeth than the one that I come across in the play.
I agree.
Think that that's the benefit of the novels, is that the empathy that you have for the characters is definitely greater.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, he is a tragically flawed hero. The ending is really quite sad. It is incredibly sad, isn't it?
Very
the way because there is affection from the main characters. I mean, I feel for what happened to Banquo.
Yeah.
For someone who had been a father, like a father to Macbeth. Kind of things.
And Macbeth mentions it himself. I mean, when he's discussing ways and means of getting rid of Banquo with Lady.
Yes.
And he actually sort of outlines it that, he is a father to me. He gave me everything. And the reason why I have to do it is because Fleance, I'm 15 years older than Fleance, and, he would probably want me out of the way. And the whole thing is paranoia, really. Yeah. It's all in his mind.
It is.
Sharmila, so who would you recommend this to?
Anyone who hasn't read the original Macbeth, please read it, because then you'll be tempted to go back and check the original. And this is a great book on its own. Just because we are talking about it being a retelling of Shakespeare, you'll enjoy it without having read the original at all. This is a wonderful book. I would recommend it to anyone who likes reading. Crime fiction as well.
It's very recently been published. So if you've just tuned in, we were talking about Macbeth by Jo Nesbø. He's retold the Shakespeare classic, and it's part of the Hogarth Shakespeare series. Quite a few have been retold already. So we've had The Taming of the Shrew with Anne Tyler's Vinegar Girl, which I think is quite funny. It's also a very short read. So if you're looking for a comedy to pick you up after the tragedy, I'd recommend that one. Thank you so much to Sharmila for coming on the show.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.